Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be looking at key market themes and a number of UK equities. And to do that, we're joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello again, John. Good to be back.
So, Alan, looking at data this morning, but everybody waking up would have been met with the headline of 10.1% inflation in July for the UK. Now, that's the highest of most of the G7, well above the figure that we saw from the US last week, where they actually quite interestingly missed analyst expectations. Here in the UK, we were well above what the economists had down. I think the estimates were 9.8%, so coming up 0.3% higher than those estimates there. And you know, looking at comments coming out from the market this morning, Alan, it looks as though it's going to go higher from here. But let's take this now and look at it from a market's perspective. Now, of course, if you look at the FTSE 100, that's not really a representation of the UK economy. And we started slightly stronger in London here, but we're trading negatively at this point in time. But when you're looking at this figure here, I mean, what does it say about the UK and its place on the global stage at the moment, Alan? And, you know, what's the market implications you feel for higher inflation in the UK, if we're able to see the US, for example, start to see a drop in inflation, in fact? I mean, do you feel that there's a bit of an irrelevance for the FTSE 100 in this headline inflation data we've seen this morning?
I think that's a very valid point, actually, John. But of course, yeah, 10.1%. Outstripping analyst expectations, and as we were saying before we came on air, there seems to be very little leadership, or you know, Boris is just bumbling around Greece on his holidays, doesn't really seem to care or have a grasp of the situation, and we just have this vacuum at the top, it seems, to actually get to grips with it. But the fact is, the Bank of England's governor, of course, as we spoke about last week, was very, very bearish in his forecast for inflation. It's going to peak at 13.1%. And given the big jump we've seen in July to 10.1%, that looks to be on. In fact, we could even exceed that. So it's almost like it's 1973 all over again. And people waking up and seeing those numbers this morning may well have thought, well, I'll just roll over and stay in bed. I won't bother to get up. And of course, back in 1973, we had 3-day weeks, we had power blackouts, all sorts of issues. And you know, we're not obviously at that stage yet, but it does feel a bit doom and gloom at the moment. But again, the markets haven't really responded. I mean, I think they took on board the Bank of England's forecast last week, and looking forward, the markets are obviously planning 6 to 9 months ahead, or reflect the picture 6 to 9 months ahead, and have taken a pretty sanguine view. Certainly, you know, the companies that we're going to talk about shortly have been hit by cost inflation, and that will continue to impact on their numbers. But I suppose the underlying picture is, if revenues and profits continue to grow, even if they're partly impacted by cost inflation, the underlying picture still is pretty healthy. So that's probably one conclusion that can be drawn from these numbers. In regard to the UK standing versus the US, Brexit standalone, I think we're in uncharted territory, and it's going to be very hard to call the outcome. I don't think we can compare ourselves to the US or Europe. We have a unique set of circumstances at the moment. And unfortunately, it needs some firm leadership at the top to be able to give the markets and certainly the UK population some confidence and visibility going forward. So uncharted territory. I think actually the guy to listen to is the governor of the Bank of England. I think they've put out a bearish forecast. Looks like that's going to be fulfilled. So he's probably the one guy that we can all listen to and get a fairly accurate reading from at this moment in time.
Yes, of course. The Bank of England governor has taken into consideration a number of different factors and gave out a pretty gloomy outlook on the UK economy. One of those factors would have been actually, though, Alan, the policies and actions or inactions from the UK government. I mean, if we look at Germany, for example, they're putting in certain measures there to control energy bills for the population there. That's something that hasn't been done yet here in the UK. I mean, of course, we've got this leadership battle going on at the moment between Rishi and Liz Truss. I mean, do you think there's an opportunity for the new Prime Minister to come in and really take control of this inflation? Because a lot of this, and looking at the figures, a lot of this is energy bills, which can be, you know, acted upon. I mean, do you think if we do get strong action from the UK government in terms of the next Prime Minister, that we could actually start to see the UK inflation rate fall back in line with the rest of the G7?
Yeah, I do, Jonathan. And I think it's just a shame that we have this situation now where we have to wait for Parliament to complete the cycle and for voting to be completed on, I think it's 5th of September, so the new PM can be announced. But I'm absolutely certain that when either Rishi or Liz come to power, they'll have a package of measures designed to deal with this, which could very well tackle inflation. I mean, let's not forget, we've come out of COVID and a very comprehensive set of furlough schemes and financial support measures were put in place by Rishi in order to combat this. So you can be pretty sure, and you know, if Liz Truss gets into power, I'm sure Rishi will have a place in her cabinet at some point. So I think she'll still benefit from that input, and I'm absolutely sure a package of measures will be put in place. The government have demonstrated manifestly that they're able to fund, you know, such extreme measures as furlough schemes, financial support for families during COVID. It's now a different sort of problem. They'll be able to do the same. And I think it's an opportunity for the new leader to actually produce a set of measures that actually exceeds those currently offered by Germany and other countries across Europe.
Yes, but that will be something that we watch with interest. So, and as we touched on there, Alan, not a great deal of movement in the FTSE 100. And that's largely due to the composition of revenue and earnings of FTSE 100 companies coming from overseas. But the first company that we're going to discuss today is a fantastic bellwether of the UK economy in house builder Persimmon. They've had their half yearly results up this morning, Alan. Looking at the sort of headline figures, completions fell, but you know, what else was in there to maybe give some optimism on their earnings going forward for the rest of the year?
Well, revenues are slightly down, 1.84 billion for the first half last year, 1.69 billion for the first half this year. Profits of 439, nearly 440 million versus 480 million in the first half last year. So they've got cost inflation at 8-10%, but the UK property market is just delivering as ever, and it's actually delivering sales price inflation that matches that. So there's still very strong demand too. Forward order book of 2.32 billion, which is higher than first half last year, which is 2.2 billion. So we have robust housing prices. We have really pent up savings. You know, people haven't been able to spend money during the COVID, so they now have a greater access to or better access to to savings than they had previously. And also, you know, companies like Persimmon, I think we've spoken about this previously. What these companies do, they hoard land banks. So they build up land banks over years and years. And Persimmon has one of the best land banks in the industry. And it's taking measures all the time to improve what it does, which is why, as you point out, John, the company is a bellwether for the industry. So, yeah, there's some uncertainty going forward. Obviously, you know, we've just covered this with inflation and uncertainty. But the one thing is, the UK is a finite territory. We're an island. So you can only build so many houses here, and that will always sustain housing prices, in my view. We'll see corrections. We'll see lulls in the property market. But that's the one area I think we can depend on. And certainly, if you're looking to invest into the sector, you know, Persimmon currently, shares are currently trading at £18.22. They're off about 1.5% this morning. You know, that's the old buy the rumour, sell the news adage. Obviously, the news is out. But I mean, dividend yield of 12.97% at this level, you know, that's an inflation beating dividend right there. So why wouldn't you have it in your portfolio?
Yeah, I mean that yield is astounding, and you know the cash generation of these companies means that you know, of course, we see if a real downturn in the house markets that may come under threat, but you know the cash generation is pretty substantial, and it's able to maintain these dividends.
Yeah,
for the house builders. But I mean, just to finish off by looking at the shares here on Persimmon. Now we were looking at a share price, back in April 2021, and shares were up at £32. We're now trading, as you said, around that £18 mark. I mean, how much of that was, you know, people being over enthusiastic last year on the back of the reopening of the economy from the pandemic, and how much of the fall is people, you know, front running any real downturn in the housing market, which may not happen?
I'd guess no. I mean, I think as much as anything, there was a big migration from the city during COVID. Of course, people, with expensive city properties were cashing in and moving to the country. And we've seen, as you know, I live on the south coast in Seaford, and that's been absolutely in evidence here. Particularly around where I live, property comes on the market. We've had two examples. We were talking to some neighbours yesterday. Two examples: properties come on the market, and they go within a few days, and then you hear that they're sold for above the asking price. So, there's almost a bidding war now. So that, you know, that's been very much a driver. But of course, now we're returning to some semblance of normality. I think, people that might have that moved out of the city, maybe considering buying back in. So that particular drive has slowed down. And of course, we've got the factors. Of course, we have the drop this year due to the Ukraine war, the uncertainty that's generated, the consequential inflation. So I think where the share price is now is a reflection of that cocktail of uncertainty. And of course, added to that, we have the Brexit scenario. We have the uncertainty over the PM going forward. But I think there's a huge opportunity here, going back to what we were saying just now, for the new PM to really, you know, draw a line in the sand and throw some markers down, come up with a package for people to deal with their energy bills, and also to make it more attractive to get first-time buyers into the property market. And I know for a fact that the lending restrictions, talking to some people yesterday, lending for first-time buyers has the restrictions there have been eased, so it's easier for younger couples to either get on the ladder or to add to what they're currently doing. So they might be borrowing a bit extra to go up into the loft or whatever. That's now being made easier. So I think we'll certainly see current levels maintained. But I mean, to me, where Persimmon is now, the shares look something of a bargain, particularly given that dividend. It's no wonder it's a cornerstone of so many investment funds.
Indeed. That dividend's hard to ignore, and it's going to be interesting to see how other house builders have performed in the first half and what the second half brings for them, given the inflation data and possible interest rate hikes that we're going to see moving forward. So let's move on now, Alan, to a company that's presented recently at a UK Investor magazine presentation. A very, very strong performance there from Paul Johnson. And just looking here, Alan, at the shares of Power Metal Resources yesterday, very strong move in that company. What was the driver behind that?
I interviewed Paul, as you know, on yesterday. We recorded the interview sort of on Monday ahead of the announcement. We spoke about the fact that really Power Metal is now transitioning into a company that has, obviously it has a 14 different assets around the world, but this is an asset that they've gone straight into the ground with the drill, and they've actually drilled onto the edge of a magnetic anomaly that was revealed through the survey work that's been done. This is, of course, the Malopo Farms project in Botswana that by the time Power Metal completes its options, which it's very close to doing, it will own 88%, in other words, pretty well the whole asset. So when Paul and I spoke on the interview, we looked at a number of slides that were in the announcement yesterday, and this is a huge area. I mean, we're looking the drill rod went into the ground and came out. They surveyed 0.44% nickel across a seven meter length. You know, which is a big area. You know, a lot of these samples tend to be, you know, across say half a meter or 50 centimeters or whatever. But that's a big sample, and it's on the edge of what appears to be an anomaly that's some 800 meters long. There are also some other anomalies identified on the mag maps nearby. So this is really exciting. But you know, we've got some grades that have come out of the ground that have very much moved Power Metal forward. And what's exciting is I was talking about this company yesterday on another channel, and just looking at the 14 different assets they have. They've got projects in the USA, they've got projects in Canada, they've got projects in Australia, and also others in Botswana and in the DRC, all of which are at various stages of evolution. There are four IPOs that have taken place this year. One's already happened. Of course, Power Metal have a stake in First Class Metals with a bunch of assets in Canada on the Hemlo-Schreiber Gold Belt near to the Barrick-Hemlo gold mine. We have Gold Metal Resources that has a package of assets in Nevada, USA, with the flagship asset being the Pilot Mountain Tungsten asset that has a JORC resource all of its own. We then have the New Ballarat Gold Company in Australia, which is a joint venture with Red Rock Resources, where they're with assets owned in the Victoria Goldfields. Also, First Development Resources have assets in the Paterson province, a gold bullseye there, or a magnetic bullseye, very similar to the magnetic bullseye found at the Havieron, owned by, of course, Greatland Gold. That needs no introduction. That's not too far away. So this raft of assets the company has, plus its own assets, including the Tati Greenstone belt, also in Botswana. And then, of course, as we've said, you know, the Malopo Farms project, and that result yesterday really moved the shares on. I mean, we've now got a valuation of 20 million. I did a back of the fag packet summary a few months ago. And given the different assets the group has, I made a comparison to other companies that are trading, you know, with one or two assets that are similar, but are traded and listed separately. And I came to a sum of the parts valuation of about 70 million. So in my book, that means the share price still has an awful long way to go. You know, that's 3.5-4p easily. Obviously, if Malopo Farms develops and it becomes the asset that we now think it could be, then, you know, sky's the limit.
Fantastic, fantastic. So, I mean, investors that are looking at Power Metal Resources, Alan, for you, you know, in the short term, what can they expect in terms of news flow?
Well, just an absolute raft of news flow. We have IPOs on the launch pad for Golden Metal Resources. We have an IPO on the launch pad for First Development Resources. And every time those companies come to market, of course, Power Metal has a stake in each company. So that stake, if you like, is crystallized in terms of a market valuation. And all that adds to the bottom line. And then on top of that, you've got the existing projects that are underway. I mean, the Silver Peak project, for example, in British Columbia, Canada, that's around the Eureka Silver Mine, which was produced many years ago. Teams on the ground there at the moment, and there's some great pictures on Power Metal Twitter feed that show you what's happening there. So it's just this constant stream of news flow. And then, you know, we're going to have, given the resources the company has, you know, it raised just over $1 million again at the start of the year. Again, that was at 1.7p. So, you know, the shares now are an absolute bargain level compared to that at 1.25p. So we have all this work yet to come, but the resources can now be focused on fast tracking and bringing other drilling rigs onto the Molopo Farms project in Botswana, get more drills into the ground, prove the asset up. And then Paul, of course, was also in charge of Metal Tiger when they made the Sandfire discovery some years ago. And of course, we all know what happened there. So it's a very exciting time for this company, but also a very exciting time for the sector as well, because the mining sector has been bumping along the bottom for so long. The commodities are still hugely important. And given that the Russian production has now been shut out of the world market, there's an ever-increasing need to locate new sources of nickel, of course, of gold, of copper, and other assets. And mining companies, junior mining companies like this, offer huge opportunities, and when they find it, spectacular upside for investors.
Indeed. I mean, that's something that Paul Johnson picked up on in a podcast that we did with him, and something we've discussed in some detail about, you know, sentiment surrounding the junior explorer sector. It may be starting to improve. There's been some very good moves in some companies over the last few weeks, and, you know, those ones that have been on a significant downtrend are starting to bottom out. We've seen moves like we've seen in Power Metal Resources. So it looks as though the market's starting to wake up to some of the value in some of these companies down there. So that's going to be a sector that I'm sure on the podcast we keep a close eye on, and we'll be looking at again in the near future. So, Alan, now let's move on to the last company that we're going to discuss today, in Aquis. We presented a number of Aquis companies earlier on this year in a virtual presentation. There's a real diversity of growth companies on Aquis. Some of them very exciting, you know, revenue generating companies. They've got great technologies, operating in, you know, very interesting sectors. But the volumes have always been a question mark, Alan. But, you know, we saw about a month ago now a big change to that in access on Hargreaves Lansdown. So, I mean, what does that look like, and what do you expect from Aquis listed stocks going forwards?
Well, of course, Aquis has got a huge history, and you know, we've been in my various roles over the years, I've been involved and, you know, very closely aligned with Aquis and what they're doing. And of course, I think given the fact that the London Stock Exchange has now hiked its minimum market capitalization requirement to 30 million, and AIM, the cost of listing on AIM, you know, some companies are prohibitive. Aquis is the obvious solution. It's the obvious destination. But over the years, in its various iterations, of course, we've had OFX, we've had Plus Markets, we've had ISDX. But in its latest iteration, Aquis has finally, I believe, come of age and offers investors, again, you know, if you're talking about a low risk investment, it's this company obviously is a spread of risk across a number of platforms. Of course, we have the Aquis Exchange, which is operates MTFs and you know, offers a lit order book with no aggressive non-client proprietary trading on the exchange, which lowers, you know, risk for investors. We have the AQSE, which is the stock market that provides the primary or IPO opportunity for companies looking to list. And of course, we've spoken about various companies that have listed on ECOS this year, including Lyft Global Ventures. And of course, it offers an opportunity for and a trading venue for investors and as a regulated exchange. And then you've got ACWIS Technologies. So this is the if you like, the third point of the triangle that represents the group. That's the software and technologies business that actually provides the technology to operate the exchange and the exchange, and also provides market surveillance facilities and gateways for banks and brokers and investment funds to operate through. And certainly, Alistair Haynes, who's been driving the growth over the past few years, has done a great job with his team. Jonathan Cleland also is the chief ops officer still remaining. They've reinforced the board recently, brought more people in, and certainly the steps forward have been great. But all the way through, for retail investors wanting to access ACWIS stocks, they've always been hampered by the fact that it's not an that they can't access the exchange via online dealing accounts. And of course, with Hargreaves' announcement, that was, in my view, the biggest announcement in the company's history. But for some reason, just the markets the way they are at the moment, it seemed to go totally unnoticed. But I think it's hugely important. You know, the fact is that Hargreaves now includes certain ACWIS shares, and with ACWIS, of course, you have the access listing, so that gets you onto the market in the first place, which of course is what Lyft has gone through. And then once the company starts to perform and deliver growth and returns and capital gains for shareholders, depending on the revenue it's generating, it then becomes an apex company. So that's kind of the real growth sector of the ACWIS offering, and of course it's these growth companies that you can currently trade on Hargreaves Lansdown. But that's the first step. You know, they'll be connecting to other retail service providers, and other platforms will offer trading on ACWIS shares. And I think this is an absolute quantum leap for the company, which hasn't been shown or represented in any form of share price movement. But it's probably a case that the first step is taken with the biggest service provider in the UK. So they'll see how that goes, iron out any glitches, and then of course they'll move it on, so AJ Bell and other share dealing services will take up the ACWIS offering. But it's a huge step forward, and if you're looking at investing into ACWIS stocks, then this is a good way to gain exposure to those stocks, because obviously if those stocks grow, then consequential revenues for the ACWIS exchange grow also. So it's a very soft way, if you like, to gain introduction to that broad cross section of opportunities. But yeah, I mean, shares are currently trading at 431p, year lows of 340p, so it's come up a bit over August, which is good to see. But I think we're going to see many more companies listing on ACWIS as the year goes by, looking for that opportunity, looking to become a growth company and offer investors access to buying and selling and holding the stock through their online dealing accounts.
I mean, looking at the ACWIS share price here, Alan, how much do you think of this is a reflection of, you know, overall sentiment in, you know, in markets at the moment? Because of course they earn their revenue from transactions. Yeah. Of course they earn on the stock exchange business a significant level of their revenue from new listings. Now obviously when economic conditions start to decline, you know, we saw the shares up at about £7. Let's have a look there, about 52 weeks ago. I mean, do you think this steady decline's been a, you know, a representation about overall sentiment of the market as opposed to actually what Aquis are doing as a business?
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing more. I mean, just to say that the chairman, Glenn Collinson, bought 12,000 shares at £5.12p back in April this year. So that cost him 62,000. So he's obviously sitting on a loss, but it absolutely reflects that picture. You know, the low trading volumes, the light volume over the summer, and the fact that that of course the move to connect to Hargreaves Lansdown has gone barely unnoticed by the market. So I think there's a good opportunity on offer here. Pick up the stock while the market's low. When the volumes increase, so will the share price, and that'll give shareholders at that point capital gains. So I think, you know, at this sort of level, it's looking really good value.
Indeed. Now, looking at that valuation compared to the earnings, certainly one for investors to have a look at. So just as a recap of the stocks that we discussed today, first up was Persimmon with the ticker of PSN. It was then Power Metal Resources with a ticker of POW. And then was Aquis Exchange with a ticker of AQX. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
And thank you to everybody for listening. Thanks very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.